Our scripture reading this evening will be 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 6 through 13. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 6 through 13. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, "The people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it."
I want to see if you will do everything within your power to follow me as we go through this lesson this evening. Please turn with me to the book of James chapter 4. In James chapter 4, there is something that is stated there where he says, ask in the form of a question, verse 1, "Whence come wars and whence come fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your pleasures that war in your members?" From whence come wars and fightings? They come from within. They come from the lust that was within you, the pleasures that you have that cause you to have the wars and the fightings. There's a lot that is done to struggle with in life. There's a lot of temptations that were placed upon us. And with each one of those, there's a tremendous struggle that takes place. And it's not so much how many we will face. It's just a matter of when the temptation will come. It's in some cases, we don't know when it will happen. It happens very subtly. And sometimes we put ourselves in positions where those things just easily come up. And we find ourselves struggling as to what to do, right or wrong. In the book of 1 John, the second chapter, verse 16, there are lusts that take place. Lust of the eyes, lust of flesh, and the pride of life. And every single one of them that are placed against us wants a lot of attention. And these temptations will do everything possible to pave their way into your life so that it will be given access to your eyes, to your heart. Sometimes whenever it is that you face this temptation, wherever it may be, there's a tendency sometimes once it seemingly shocks you, once it comes to you, there's a tendency sometimes to want to see it again, or to do it again, or to believe it again, to hear it again. Maybe sometimes because you maybe didn't understand fully what it was the first time, or maybe it caught so much of your attention the first time you wanted to see it or to go to where it is again. And we're going to be inundated with several of those. 1 John, the second chapter, verse 16, tells you very clearly what happens. But the thing is, once we find ourselves going to this place or seeing this thing or hearing this, there's a tendency to want to do it again and again and again, to the point that we find ourselves dealing with the most common temptation known to man: tolerance. We find ourselves so easily adjusting our schedule, isolating ourselves away, whatever the case may be, in order that we be able to see it, hear it, or do it again. We find ourselves tolerating this. In other words, we take these very brief, short, quick visions, words, whatever it may be, and we see this on a very limited basis, but we do it a very quick way, and as a result, we find ourselves going back to it in the very same manner. Quickly, very brief, short, but we want to see this. We want to be a part of that. And we go sometimes to those places where they are or where it is. Like the prodigal son in the book of Luke chapter 15, when he goes into the far country. There's something going on in that far country that leads him there. He does, as it talks about in chapter 15, verse 13, verse 14, he spends his substance on riotous living. He wastes it. He goes to where it is, and he finds himself involved in these things to the point he tolerates it. He tolerates it extremely. When you find yourself yielding to the temptation of tolerance, the tendency is for you to go to the next step. And that is to become very indifferent to it. Indifference has evolved over time. First of all, I believe the idea of indifference started from a religious standpoint of saying, one church is good as another. Believe whatever it is that you want to believe. Whatever religion suits your preference and what it is that you desire, then that's fine. One church is just as good as another. Go to the church of your choice. Therefore, from the religious standpoint, I believe we find ourselves to the point of, from this being very relative and inclusive, to the point that we found ourselves doing the very same thing morally. From the religious standard of doctrine, we become very indifferent, like the book of 2 Timothy chapter 4. In verse 3 and verse 4, we kind of find ourselves having itching ears, wanting to hear this more, and we become very indifferent to the point that we find ourselves morally changing. Our standards have loosened up. And we adopt some things that we never thought we'd ever adopt. We find ourselves believing things we thought we never believed. We start dealing with relationships to what you drink, to the things you wear, to the movies you go see. We've morally found ourselves becoming to be very indifferent. And I must tell you that what's happened as a result of that, we have honored the idea of indifference. We honor it. It's not that we just go along with it and we just kind of find ourselves being, well, that's just the way things are these days. We honor that. It's just to say, it's so good to have those choices, or it's so good to have things relaxed. In other words, we don't like all this strict narrowness and standards that the scriptures teach. Therefore, we honor this indifference that's come as a result of the tolerance that we find ourselves in. All along the way, we find ourselves doing exactly what Paul talked about in the book of Romans chapter 7, though. We find ourselves seeing these things that take place, and then all of a sudden, we realize, I should have never done this. I should have never gone there. I should have never said that. And we're just like the book of Romans chapter 7, where it says in verse 14, we know that the law is spiritual, but I'm carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I know not, for not what I would, that do I practice. But what I hate, that I do. But if what I would not, that I do, I consent to the law that's good. See, that's what we do. And then verse 17, so now it is no more I that do it, but sin which dwells in me. We find ourselves coming to the point of, from tolerance to the point of indifference. And then we find ourselves coming to this point. From having yielded to tolerance, and having developed an attitude of indifference toward it, as if to say, that's going to be around, and we can't do anything about it, we can't stop this matter, and it's just right there in front of us, then we find ourselves developing a pattern. Patterns in a life that develop. Very similar to what you see in the book of James chapter 1 with the idea of temptation. In James chapter 1, I want you to notice in verse 13, let no man say he's tempted of God, because God does not tempt man. But then verse 14, each man is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lust and enticed. Then the lust, when it has conceived, bears sin. And the sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. We've gone from the tolerance to the indifference to now we set the pattern. And the interesting thing about this pattern is it's a repeated pattern. It's a cycle that continues. Once the toleration is yielded to, then the indifference comes, and then we find ourselves going through the same pattern and the same cycle. There are some people that when they see the temptation, immediately say, I don't want to be involved in those pleasures. Those are sinful. Those are ungodly. Like the case in Hebrews chapter 11 with Moses. In Hebrews 11, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, in verse 24, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He saw this. When the temptation came, he was not going to tolerate it and become indifferent to it and join the pattern that has developed in the lives of other people. He didn't want part of that. He wanted everything to be different. He wanted to find himself involved with the people of God. And notice in verse 26, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. That's what he wanted to be a part of. He didn't want to get hooked. He didn't want it to be known for him to know this is just a habit that you can't break. You can't stop it. This is just a pattern that's developed. And the thing about it is, these patterns that develop in the lives of people, sometimes folks seem to think, I can't stop this. This can't be something you just put away. People have become to be so tolerant and so indifferent to it, it's become to be their way of life. And they don't know anything different because they first yielded to the first temptation. And it went from that point. And I think there's something to be understood when we deal with these patterns that develop. Some of these things that are going on in the lives of people, they don't know any better. And they do need to be taught, and they do need to be guided. They need somebody to take them away and say, that's not the pattern of life in which you should be following. That's not what kind of life God wants you to live. That's not what's conducive to finding yourself in His grace and in His favor. It doesn't stop there, though. From the point of tolerance to the idea of indifference to the patterns that develop, then the consumption increases. Once the pattern develops, and when this lust keeps coming to you and the temptation is there, then you keep taking it. Sin keeps you longer than you really thought you would ever stay. In the book of Luke chapter 15, that's what was stated regarding the idea of this man we know as the prodigal son. He comes to this place and he's there a lot longer than maybe he thought he'd ever stay. Maybe just a brief period of time, but in this far country, he stays a little bit longer. Whatever energy you put into the pattern, you will do everything you can to get it, and you'll get more of it wherever it may be, and to whoever it may be that will give it to you, you will find yourself involved in it, and you will find yourself staying with it longer than you thought you ever would stay. All because the first step of tolerance took place in your life. There must be something about what goes on in 2 Peter that needs a lot more study than what we'll give it tonight. But 2 Peter chapter 2 is about people who depart because of false teachings. I want you to notice the description that is given about these false teachers in verse 18. For uttering great swelling words of vanity, they entice in the lust of the flesh by lasciviousness those who are just escaping from them that live in error, promising them liberty, while they themselves are bondservants of corruption. For of whom a man is overcome, of the same is he also brought into bondage. There's a lot of people that get to this point right here, and they think they can stop this. They've come from tolerating to indifferent, and the pattern has developed, and they consume it so much, they think that they've got the ability to stop at any point. And they'll tell you, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop this. I'm going to overcome this. It's almost as if to say these people could stop it at any moment, but they were so overwhelmed with it and so caught up in it, they themselves were in bondage in corruption. They couldn't stop. They couldn't stop it. They just want to consume more and more and more of it. And you think about it, if you're a false teacher, if you've got people that admire you and listen to you, you're going to tell them more lies just to get the numbers. I think it's very important to know that when a person finds himself in this position, that they consume it so much, they find themselves isolated away from the people that really love them, like their husband or their wife or their children, members of the church, co-workers, friends. In order to receive what it is they're so consumed to have, they will isolate themselves from all these people in order to get what it is that they're wanting. And as a result, when you find yourself consuming so much of this, then what happens is you become to be, like the book of 2 Peter chapter 2, you become to be in bondage to this. And what you will do when you become to be in bondage to it, you will excuse it. You will soften it. You will even rename it in order that you will be able to participate in it. That's the extreme of which you go. From the point of tolerance all the way to the point of the bondage of where you will do whatever it takes to participate in this. Even if it means excluding other people. 1 John chapter 1 verse 8 really describes the situation where he says, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. See, we don't even call it sin. We will just call it whatever we want to call it. We want to call it our lifestyle. We want to call it what I like. We want to call it my pleasure, whatever we want. We've just come to the point of tolerating it, and we've also come to the point of accepting it. And here's an interesting thing that I want to point out to you. The people on the outside that watch this take place in this person's life, they watch their attitudes, they see their behaviors, they watch their actions, they hear them talk, and they ask them, how could they have found themselves in this position? Why did they ever get themselves so involved in this that they think they can't get out? How could they ever get themselves to this point? And they see the downward spiral that this person is involved in, all for the point of intolerance, now to the point of bondage, and it's just found themselves so beat down, it's come as a result of something very slow and very subtle. What is there in your life at this point that you could say that you first tolerated it, you yielded to the temptation of tolerance, and then you found yourself being very indifferent toward it, and then you developed a pattern in your life, and then you wanted to consume more of it, and then you finally found yourself in bondage? What is there that you know of that's going on in your life right now that would best describe or that goes along with that pattern? I want to reveal to you something in just a little bit at the end of the lesson, something that's taking place that is very, very prevalent. Very, very prevalent. It's one among hundreds of things. At this moment, though, instead of telling you what that particular thing is, I want to talk to you just about the remedy. I want to talk about how it is, how could you find yourself being released from the bondage and the lie that you've lived? How could you get out of that? First thing I would suggest to you, counsel yourself. And by that, I don't mean you take in your mind and have in your image, in your mind, this picture like they do on TV of your good conscience on one shoulder and the bad conscience on the other shoulder, and listen to both and judge whether or not you think you should go to the left or go to the right, or listen to the one on the left or listen to the one on the right. Don't. This is not what you're talking about counseling yourself. Counsel yourself by asking yourself the question, what matters in life from God's view? That's what you need to ask yourself. If you look at it from the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13, we would know that it's fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. That's God's view of your life. And if he says, if you ask God, well, what is it I should be doing while I'm living in the world, then the answer might be Romans chapter 12, in verse 2, where it states it this way. Well, go back to verse 1. He swears, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service. And be not fashioned according to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. God would say, that's the view that you should have about yourself and the world. Honestly, see if that's where you stand. In other words, see if this is the course of life of which you're traveling. If you're following the view that God has of who you should be and what you should do. And ask yourself, whenever the temptation comes to the point that you're going to tolerate this and yield to it to the point that you become to be in bondage, at the point of which that temptation comes to you, are you going to feed it more? You're going to be a part of it more? Or are you going to find yourself at the point where you say, okay, this is all I'm going to do. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to stop at this point. Are you going to feel the fire, or are you going to say, okay, this is it. I'm going to try to develop a little protection system that says, no, I walk away, I change friends, I go somewhere else, I do something else. I mean, in other words, do you have a zero tolerance to this? Zero tolerance to whatever the temptation is that you face. In the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 13, at the end of the book, verse 5, says this. Paul emphatically says, try your own selves whether you're in the faith. Prove your own selves. Or know you not that as your own selves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you be reprobate. Now if you're reprobate and rejecting, then you go back to the same cycle. They're starting about at tolerance, the indifference, and the pattern. And then the consumption increases, and then you get to the point of bondage. You go back to that same cycle again. That is, if you're rejected. But if you're trying yourself and seeing just exactly where you are, then when the fire comes, you're going to put it out. Don't let the fire get started. So, counsel yourself. The second thing is, avoid loneliness. In the very beginning, in the book of Genesis, chapter 2, verse 18, God created a helper for man. And in doing so, it makes you understand that to do what is done in life needs to be done with others. Not by yourself. Not just alone. Avoid the loneliness. The loneliness is what creates the atmosphere and the conditions whereby the tolerance begins, the indifference is yielded to, and then the patterns develop, and then the consumption increases, and then you find yourself in bondage, and you don't know what to do. You don't know where to go, and you say to yourself, I don't know, I think I'm going to be able to stop this. But you don't stop it. Christians should exhort one another. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, talks about provoking one another to love and good works. In other words, find yourself getting in touch with someone who will help, who will talk with you, who will be one who will pray with you together about this, whatever it may be. Rather than saying, okay, I'm going to be able to do this all on my own. I got myself into it. I'm going to get myself out of it. And I'll tell you that it doesn't work that way. You're not going to succeed. In overcoming the temptation of which you have yielded. You find somebody to tell you the truth. Jesus talked about rather in John chapter 8 verse 45, I say the truth, you don't believe me. Paul said in Galatians chapter 4 verse 16, am I becoming your enemy by telling you the truth? Telling someone the truth. And here's, I'm going to be on the opposite side. I'm going to be the side of the person that would see this person in this situation and would like to help them and would like to partner with them and like to be in touch with them and pray with them and talk to them about it. There are people who will avoid the possibilities of getting involved in this and say, who am I to help this person in this problem? I'm not going to find myself getting involved in here in all the things that are going on with that person. That's not my business, we would say. If the solution, one of the solutions to this problem happens to be avoiding loneliness, then there's got to be some outside support and help. Why? The book of Galatians chapter 6 tells you this in verse 1, talking about those people that are caught in a trespass. This is the way he says in verse 7. If you or her spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, looking to thyself, lest thou also be tempted, bearing you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. If any man thinks himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Those people that are participating in this sin, yielding to the tolerance, they haven't found the way out. So therefore, there needs to be someone out on the outside that would help them deal with this. Get with the one who will tell you the truth. Everyone, at some point, is going to have to be really honest about this temptation and about this sin's existence. And the person on the outside can help them see the reality of this. While the person that's participating in it is so deceived, so developed in a pattern, and so consumed in it, they just tolerate it on and on and on. Loneliness is going to yield destruction. Iron sharpens iron, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17 says. And when there are weaknesses in brethren, Romans chapter 15, verse 1 to verse 3, the people that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak. Don't let me paint a picture in your mind that says this person on the outside that can help the one that's lonely has got to be perfect. That's not true. The one that is on the outside that can help the person the loneliness is just as broken as the one that's participating in this. And at that moment, we say, I'm just as bad in what I do as they are in what they did. Therefore, the two will never meet. Even though you may be broken in a different way than this individual is in what they're dealing with, the process of mutual edification is so clear and so emphatic and so important. Two are better than one, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 to verse 12. When two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 19 and 20 of that book. The Lord is in the midst of the people. Those two people that are trying to, in their mutual edification and strengthening and accountability to each other of what can be done in the midst of this sin of which they tolerated. And then this one. This is really, really important. Fear God and fear your own blind pride. The blind pride says, I can stop this. I will stop this. You wait and see. No fear of God associated with this at all. It's all about them. You see, the thing about it is, it all started out with them to start with. The pleasure, the tolerance, it started out with them and it continues to be with them. You remember the prophecy in, I should say, the revelation, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel chapter 2, when Daniel came and interpreted the dream, and he talked about this stone that would come and destroy the things that were made of clay and iron, gold, bronze, those kind of things. It would bring all those kingdoms down that were being full of pride and led that way. All those exalted kingdoms, that one stone would knock them all down. Do you know the stones that have done the most damage to people that are Christians? Elders, teachers, preachers, and on. They're the same stones and the same temptations in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. They're all common to every Christian. The same stone. Same stone. Fear God and fear your own pride. Because the most dangerous statement that you will ever make is, I would never, and you fill in the blanks. In the book of Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, chapter 8, verse 13, Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, fear the Lord. Fear God. And fear your own blind pride simultaneously while you're fearing God. That's what is so significant in this. The wisdom is in fearing God rather than the foolishness of the blind pride that says, I'm going to stop this. You wait and see. I am going to get over this. In the midst of the temptation, those words, I would never, don't last. You find yourself right in the middle of it. And those people that say, well, this is what I would do in those kind of situations. It's not what you can do. It's what God will do through you is going to make the difference. It's very important for you to think about, you need to find yourselves setting yourself below God, not ahead of God. As soon as you set yourself ahead of God, you assume more of God in your life, as if you were the God, and you create a very false security system. And you're no safer than you are to be in the fear of God. Proverbs chapter 14 says something in verse 26 to verse 27 that I want you to listen carefully and turn with me there and read this together, where he says, in the fear of Jehovah is strong confidence, and his children shall have a place of refuge. The fear of Jehovah is a fountain of life, that one may depart from the snares of death. Get out of this, not because of your ability, because of what God does in you. Because you're only as safe as you are close to Jesus. John chapter 15, verse 1 to verse 4, is where Jesus talks about being connected to him. He says, I am the true vine. My Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes it away. And every branch that bears fruit, he cleanses it, that it may bear more fruit. Already, you are clean because of the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, so neither can you, except you abide in me. The connection to God. The fear of God. That's how you're able to overcome. Once you've yielded, don't be misled by your own blind pride to think you can do this. To think you can overcome it. Whatever it is that you may be dealing with. The one thing that has happened, once people have found themselves dealing with the idea of tolerance, to the point of indifference, to the point of finding themselves in the midst of a pattern that's developed, and they find themselves in a situation where they're consuming more of it and more of it all the time, and they're so captivated by it, is pornography. Maybe you thought I'll talk about that at the very beginning. But you can erase the word pornography and you can insert any other sin, it would be almost the same. People involved in these things like this one for so long. Thing about it is, there's a lot of people that are Christians that are involved in this. Both men and women. And we could run around this subject if you want to. That's up to you. I'm not going to run around it. I'm going to go right to it. It is a subject that sometimes we want to not just run around it, but we don't realize the power, the destructive power of it. And they never think it would ever be one of those things that will have any way, had any impact upon anybody that's a Christian. And it may very well be, at this moment, somebody in this room is involved in this. The thing about it is, you're wondering, will it ruin my life? Will it isolate me? Will it carry me away? Will it destroy me? And the answer is yes. It has, and it will. It has found itself in the hearts and the lives of people, so much so that it devalues what God honors regarding sexuality. To the point, though, that an individual, even though it devalues it, the people that are participating in it think it's of great value to their pleasure. And to them, all it is just adult entertainment. In other words, they've softened it, they've renamed it. If you were to look up this subject, it's been renamed in a lot of instances. It's considered adult entertainment. Any politician, any person of elite status, it's not used. It's the idea of adult entertainment that's used in regard to this individual, of what they're participating in. And definitely it's going to destroy more and more people's lives. And people have first tolerated to the point that it's now where it is today, placing a little crack in somebody's marriage and absolutely causing it to crumble right before their very eyes, in devaluing a woman of which God says should be honored. It's addictive. It's addictive. Like a drug, whether it's a legal drug or an illegal drug, it's addictive. It does the same thing as if you were to pop it in your mouth. One of the most interesting things about it is some people seem to think all they got to do is just wash their hands of it and go on and it'll be okay. You can't do it that way. The only way to remove this is by the blood, washed in the blood of the Lamb. If you continue in this, here's what's going to happen. It's like you stand above a fire with a bucket of gasoline. It's what it's like. It's like riding in a car in the back seat of an automatic driverless automobile that is supposed to get you to a destination of which you think it should go. That happened to a lady back in Arizona a few years back. She was in a driverless, automated car, and it killed her. She died. That's what this is like. There is no temptation such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that which you're able, but will with the temptation make also a way of escape. There is a way. The same way for every sin. It's redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. For those of you that are with us this evening who may be involved in this, or again, I mentioned to you how it is that it's not just this. But when you find yourself first to the point of yielding tolerance, to the point of indifference, when you find yourself in a position where you found a pattern developing, certain behaviors, certain attitudes, and then you find yourself wanting to do it, wanting to be part of it, wanting to see it, wanting to go where it is, and you want to do more of it. And it's got you. It's bound and held you captive. And you think you can get out, but you've not gotten out. The truth shall set you free. John 8:32. That's what sets you free. And that truth, as hard as it is to accept, it's so good to know that you could let God convict you of it today rather than go to hell with it. To the point that you would change, the point you repent, confess those faults, and let God forgive you. Either by, as a Christian, through prayer, or of those that are not Christians, by repentance and confession, Jesus as the Son, and baptism in the water. So rise up to walk in newness of life. Do what's right. While together we sing this song.